Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The White House tried to clear up the confusion today over whether federal workers should report their activities. Spokeswoman Caroline Levitt said it's simple.
For some of the agencies that you've seen who have said, please don't send these emails. It's in their best interest for that specific agency, and the president supports that.
She said 1 million federal workers have responded. Democrats say they won't support the Republicans' budget plan. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise.
This bill doesn't even mention the word Medicaid a single time. And yet all Democrats are doing is lying about what's in the budget.
Consumer confidence plummeted this month, and Kelly O'Grady of MoneyWatch tells us big retailers are preparing for Americans to watch their spending.
We're starting to see these big companies, which are often economic bellwethers for the consumer, saying even though we provide need-to-have items, we're expecting a little bit of a slowdown.
On Wall Street, the Dow is currently up more than 200 points. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
Join us on the next Midday Magazine in part one as we welcome the Heart of Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce, and in part two, the Wisconsin Rapids Family Center. It's 4 to 5 on 97.5 FM WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Portage County officers were able to reunite a family thanks to Project Lifesaver. Derek Tritz has the story.
Equipment from Project Lifesaver was key in locating a lost youth this past weekend, according to the Plover Police Department. They were found in a dumpster behind a gas station by Officer Travis Sutton. The child has cognitive disabilities that make them prone to wandering into potentially dangerous situations. Project Lifesaver provided them with a small personal transmitter that allowed the local Project Lifesaver agency to locate the child and send a trained emergency response team to the child's general location. Within an hour of being notified, the child was safely helped out, treated for cold exposure, and returned to their family.
One-third of Americans lack access to regular doctor visits in the U.S. 1 in 10 people have diabetes, and nearly a quarter of those are undiagnosed. The American Red Cross is working to help inform those who don't have access to regular care by offering free diabetes testing to donors during the month of March. The free A1C testing screens for diabetes and pre-diabetes. This valuable information can help you maintain your health and well-being. You can schedule a donation in March to receive this free testing by visiting redcrossblood.org or by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS. Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin has introduced legislation that would allow Americans to import prescription drugs from Canada. According to a press release, the goal of the bill is to lower the prices of those medications and increase access for consumers. They're also hoping the bill will create more competition in the pharmaceutical market, forcing companies to lower the prices of similar prescription drugs in America. The bill has some bipartisan support from Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Brewers' spring training continues. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers trying out players and adding familiar faces like Mark Canna, returning with a minor league deal. He could serve as a DH or first baseman. The Brewers losing to the Mariners 12-8. On Sunday, left-handed pitcher Aaron Ashby struggled in his first outing against the Rockies, coming off shoulder surgery from nearly 2 years ago.
Even though it's frustrating, frankly, everything felt pretty good. I felt a little bit of rush, maybe a little adrenaline, just getting back out there for the first time. But healthy.
College basketball, the Badgers back in action at the Kohl Center against the Washington Huskies. Greg Gard at practice after Saturday's overtime loss to Oregon.
It will be a good learning experience for us if it hasn't been already. We've gone through the film. But then you got to flush it. As I said to the team, I said, we didn't have a parade last week when we beat Purdue, right? We're not going to have a funeral today when we lost. You have to keep it in balance.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Sunny and still warm today, with high temperatures climbing to the mid-40s and rain rolling in at night. It does have a chance to mix with some snow overnight and then flips back to regular rain tomorrow afternoon, because high temperatures once again reach the mid-40s. But before that, beware of icy spots. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 48.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the Global Clef community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
The Todd Alba Show.
Elon Musk putting in so much money that it drowns out other people's voices to decide who our next Supreme Court justice is. Whether or not you're going to vote Republican or Democrat or Schimmel or Crawford, your voice is getting drowned out by Elon Musk, a guy who has no business in Wisconsin. And you don't think that Brad Schimmel is going to be in Elon Musk's pocket? That's going to affect us in Wisconsin.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
While I continue my, finger quotes, work retreat for Up North News, Chad Holmes will be filling in on Wednesday doing double duty ahead of his Wausau show.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
One would you choose, my brothers, if there was no day?
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My big thanks to Dan Schaefer, who created the recombobulation area, which I enjoy. I subscribe to it on Substack. You can also find all of Dan's great work at civicmedia.us. We were talking about Wisconsin education because there's this huge race for the superintendent of public instruction here in Wisconsin, that election on April 1st. We got into this topic about school choice, vouchers, school funding. Brittany Kinzer, one of the candidates that you will see on your April 1st ballot for superintendent. She has apparently vague notions of wanting to change things, but I haven't been able to find out a single gosh darn specific thing other than she's for school choice. I have no idea what else she stands for. I do know that a bunch of right-wing donors have given her a whole ton of money. I do know that crazy Moms for Liberty, every branch in the state, has supported her. I do know she is so message managed when she has made any public appearance during her campaign that legit, I have no idea what her actual proposal is. She talks vaguely about like standards and choice. But how do you balance the needs of public school systems with the standardless, unaccountable choice program? Do you believe in universal vouchers, Brittany? Do you think it's a good thing that Republicans in the state of Wisconsin for the last 20 years at any given opportunity have sucked funding out of our public schools and now want to keep you and me and every person listening on this network from deciding if they want to pay more in local property taxes to support their schools? Where do you stand on that, Brittany? I mean, where do you stand on anything besides saying as little as possible so that what? You have nothing to be held accountable to? I will just tell you this, from nearly 15 years in government service, I have heard from lots and lots and lots of folks that lived in Milwaukee County when I was their general counsel. Lots of complaints. And I've also heard from new elected officials, lots of complaints. I always wanted to hear the complaints. Not everybody always wanted to hear the whys. Here's what the system constraints are. Here are the things that could change those constraints. Here's what I think might actually work. Most people who have complaints are just interested in the complaining part. You hear me? You feeling me out there? They're mostly just interested in hearing themselves complain. Brittany Kinzer, is this you? Do you have any actual solutions for public education in this state? That's what I want to know. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4848. 42. Brian from Milwaukee, you're up first, sir. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Hey, yeah, not much. I just want to say that programs like early childhood education and Title I programs are extremely important, and I can attest to that because I benefited from that. Growing up, when I was a kid, I was born premature, and the doctors literally said that I was going to have the mentality of a three-year-old when I turned 18. Luckily, my parents were able to find a local school in Kenosha that did have the early childhood programming, you know, pre-kindergarten.
Yes.
And then even a school that had Title I reading and Title I math. I graduated high school just fine and went on to work in healthcare for, you know, over 15 years, thanks to those programs. I mean, they're so important, and I hope that people understand that programs like that and programs for any child with a disability or special need or whatever the case is, they need to be there. And by, you know, wiping them out is not the answer.
Brian, thanks so much. Thanks for sharing your personal experience, that you personally benefited from some of these programs that we don't know if Brittany Kinzer supports them or not. Do you support the dismantling of the Federal Department of Education, Ms. Kinzer? I'd like to know. How do you propose if the Federal Department of Education is eliminated, Ms. Kinzer, since you've never run a large school district before? How do you propose to ensure that every child with special needs, behavioral issues, receives a vigorous and appropriate education that is tailored? How are we going to make sure that that happens? Because again, reminder, charter and voucher schools, they can refuse to take kids. They don't have to take kids with disabilities. So are we just going to leave our public school systems under attack and underfunded, but with the students, the young people in our lives that need the most help and the most care, with no clear federal means, federal department that oversees those kinds of monies getting into our public school system? Ms. Kinzer, do you support Head Start, one of the single most effective federally funded early childhood education programs in history? Do you support Head Start? I'd like to know. Richard from Waukesha, you're up next, sir. What do you have to say?
Do you support Head Start?
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd just like to put in some information I've learned because of my age. I had an opportunity to have a friend that was in an orphanage, like in the 40s, maybe?
Yes, sir.
In Milwaukee. And he filled me in on his life through his time. And so I took an interest in it. And he went to private school until he went to West Point. But he got me interested, so I did some research, the progression of the government taking over the orphanages. And I saw an interview with somebody that was in charge with the orphanages, and they said when they started the orphanage system, they had a rough time of it, and eventually they got really good at it. And they believe that the government took it because it was ripe to pick.
Thanks so much, Richard from Waukesha. Let's keep going here. We got Cam from Appleton. Go ahead, Cam.
Hey, I just want to voice for those that think the grass is greener on the other side for private schools. If the school's got an issue with a teacher or a curriculum and they decide that they don't want to disclose it or talk about it with the public, then they don't have to. I don't think that anyone really wants that. I mean, think of like other companies where they end up protecting their own. It's a lot easier for them to protect their own for issues should they come up. They're not going to be honest and forthcoming with any of that stuff. And final thought, these folks that run these private schools, they're able to sell the data that they collect on your kids.
Mm. That's just downright frightening. CJ, you're up. What do you think? Should public tax dollars be going to fund religiously based education?
Amen. Yes.
Why? What about a month like
at Department of Education? Look at our results of the Department of Education, and it took COVID to find out what kids were being taught, and it wasn't.
So the curriculum for all public schools is available from your state Department of Public Instruction, which is what sets curriculum on a state by state basis. Okay, there are some federal standards, but they're quite loose. So I'm curious, I just want to ask you, are you okay with your public tax dollars going to, say, a Muslim school?
You know, it depends.
What does it depend on?
Curriculum-wise,
because I'm controlling the show right now and I want you to stay on point. And my question is, let's work this out. If religiously based education can be funded with your tax dollars, so we're going to run a school that is in a mosque and the kids go to pray 3 times a day. You're okay with your public tax dollars going to that?
If it's not teaching Sharia law, I want to know the curriculum.
Curriculum generally are not subject to public standards when they are voucher and charter schools. They can set the curriculum at whatever they want. That's one of the concerns.
Answer, Maggie. You want to just shut me off? I can answer.
CJ, do you want to complain about how I'm handling your call, or do you want to have a discussion with me? Because I'm trying to keep you focused on the fact that there are problems with voucher and charter schools, and largely it is that there is very little oversight. It is not required in any state. It is entirely jurisdictionally specific. They don't have to disclose their curriculum. They do not have financial accountability unless a particular jurisdiction does it that way. And it funds a religiously based education. Are you okay with public tax dollars funding an education that promotes Islam?
Are you okay with us failing our kids?
Please answer my question, CJ. We can argue about standards and outcomes all we want, and that is a different conversation than talking right now about standardless, privately operating schools for profit that are teaching our kids religion. And maybe not the religion that you like. That's my question today. We can argue about outcomes, and we should do that, and let's have that discussion, CJ. But today, I want to know, are you okay with a school in a mosque that's teaching the pillars of Islam using public taxpayer dollars?
Again, it depends on their curriculum. I believe parents should have the choice to take the money that they're spending on their kids and take it from a failed school.
CJ, I'm going to hop in here. A parent has the choice to take their own money and spend it on their kids' education whenever they want. It's called a private education that they can pay for. I have been in favor of choice schools set under an income limit. I don't think public tax dollars should subsidize well-to-do, upper-middle-class private school education without standards, without financial accountability that are teaching our kids religion by anybody's... I'm not sure what it is. Because we don't have oversight of any of that. That's the problem. And maybe a little later this week or early next, we'll get to arguing about outcomes, how to measure them, what the metrics should be, and how to do that best in a public education situation. When we come back, I want to talk about DEI in the age of Trump and a little bit of Black history, some things that MLK has said that you might not have ever heard. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Which would you prefer to be right?
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR. It's game day every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on WFHR's Playmakers. Thanks to local businesses Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods, you can join us 5 to 6 with your calls, sports takes, and ramblings. Covering local sports like no one else.
Clearing it out, and it is almost caught.
We'll have breaking stories, game day conversations with players and coaches, and you. 5 to 6 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on WFHR's Playmakers.
Get out of here!
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining me. Want to give some love to all of the folks on the text lines. Wes from Middleton, Tom from Jackson, Wayne from Montello. We're going to try to get you on the phones too. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I want to address two brief things about education before I move on to DEI and the age of Trump. One of the things that I hear a lot is public schools aren't working. Why should I pay for them? There has been a group of conservatives for a long time that want public education and all tax support of public free education to go away. Milton Friedman in 2006 said to the right-wing advocacy group ALEC that we need to, quote, abolish the public school system and eliminate all of the taxes that pay for it. That is what all of this is about. And if they can't do that right away, better to absolutely starve and dismantle all of the funding for public education, funnel it into your chosen, mostly white, nearly exclusively Christian, maybe a little Christian nationalist schools with no standards that are profit-making operations, and see how all that works out. Because here's the thing, CJ, and others that keep talking about, it's not working. I have yet to find a single study that shows systematically that choice and voucher schools accomplish and achieve better, consistent results than public schools do. And the ones where that has been sporadically, again, not consistently demonstrated, are schools that get to discriminate and pick their students. Listen, if I got to pick my own school and put, like, well, I'll take all the A kids from the rich families with all the resources because they'll probably do real well. Yeah, I'd have a highly performing school. When you can pick your student body, that's kind of how it goes. The challenge is, if we believe in public education, if we believe our children have a right to access meaningful, rigorous public education for free, and our kids, maybe in certain neighborhoods, maybe in certain cities, are challenged with more trauma than other kids, are hungrier than other kids, are sicker than other kids, but every child deserves an education, we can argue about results all we want. Do you agree that there should be rigorous, valuable public education for every child in the United States? Because the direction that we're moving is not that way. And I am going to oppose any candidate that wants to be the superintendent of this state's public education system who can't tell me a single clear thing that she wants to do with our public education system. Can't tell me if she supports Title I funding. Can't tell me if she supports IDEA funding or how, if the federal DOA goes away, we're going to provide IEPs to every kid who deserves that here in the state of Wisconsin. Nuh-uh. No thanks. It's too easy to just say, oh, it's not working. That's lazy. Because I don't hear solutions. All I hear is people that like to hear themselves complain. CJ, I'm talking to you. All right, let's go back to the phones. Wayne from Montello. Welcome to the show, sir. Thanks for calling.
I'm glad to be on. So a quick comment about what CJ said. And I know some of your listeners might think this, because I used to kind of think this, that a lot of these people that think that way are dumb. Well, they're not. I think that they're cruel. And I think that they're psychopaths. They only care about what benefits them, and what benefits them is a Christian education. The reason why he wouldn't comment on the Muslim thing is because it doesn't suit his interests. Now, my point on that is there's really no difference fundamentally between the Bible and the Quran. They all want women to be subservient, which is kind of what they want to teach. So it's like a manipulation to what suits them, and what suits them is a white Christian education.
Yeah. Wayne, I worry that in and amongst the rationales, while some attack results provide no potential go-forward solutions, that all of that is fig leaf for racism and the idea that there are certain people we really don't want educated. And the saddest part about all of this is that public schools are more needed in rural areas than urban. You are less likely to be able to afford a private school education, even with a voucher, in a rural area than an urban one. And so ask yourself, if you can get past the instinct, the confirmation bias, to just agree with everybody who wants to attack public education, you can get past the confirmation bias. What happens if it's your family that ultimately gets hurt? What if it's your kids? What if it's your kid with the expansive set of special needs when public schools no longer exist in your rural county in Wisconsin, and not a single private voucher or charter school will take your child with disabilities? Tell me what happens when it comes to your home. And I do want to share with everybody, I think, a bit of a poster child for Wisconsin education, both public and private. I went to a small Catholic grade school where I had amazing teachers. I went to a large urban international baccalaureate magnet high school in Milwaukee, got some of the best education a kid could receive in this state. Attended Marquette University for not one, but two degrees, and then attended the University of Wisconsin-Madison for law school. And all I can say is every child deserves every single one of the opportunities that I had. And it shouldn't depend on what stinking zip code you were born in as to whether or not you get the best our education systems have to offer. We're going to continue this great discussion and move on to DEI in the time of Trump when we come back. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pam Yonke's up next with your farm update. Keep it locked. This great discussion continues next.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For row crop farmers, nitrogen can be the most expensive part of an operation every year. But new technology has come out to change that. I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report, along with you on a Monday. Today we're talking about a machine that gives producers an opportunity to turn air into nitrogen. Jay Witt is a dealer with Green Lightning. He explains how this tool can decrease costs and increase yields.
Really what it mimics is a lightning strike, where lightning separates nitrate from oxygen, breaks it into three different molecules, and then that is adhered then to the rainwater as it falls. So, you know, when you've heard that expression that after a thunderstorm that things have greened up, that's kind of the principle behind it, and that's how it operates. So they've taken that design, which it is, what I call a divine design, and they've put that into a machine.
Jay Witt along with us. He's a dealer with Green Lightning. He says this machine takes them one step closer to feeding the world in a more efficient and cost-effective manner. Stick around. We'll take a look at closing markets next.
$1 billion. That's how much equipment is stolen from U.S. construction sites every year. These thieves are stalling projects, hurting Wisconsin's family-owned businesses, and driving up costs for everyone. Judge Brad Schimmel takes theft seriously. He holds criminals accountable and protects the people who are just trying to do their jobs. Call Judge Schimmel and thank him for protecting us. Paid for by the Associated Builders and Contractors of Wisconsin.
Well, hold on to your britches, everybody. It's time to go nuts at the Springfield Corners Testicle Festival. March 8th, you can enjoy deep-fried delicacies along with ice-cold beverages and live music by the Lights Out Band. Join me, the fabulous Farm Babe, along with the rest of the Midwest Farm Report team at Springfield Corners for your chance to win concert tickets and to try some fried Rocky Mountain oysters. It all kicks off after 2 p.m. on March 8th. Springfield Corners. See Facebook for more details.
Yes, we hope to see you there at the Testicle Festival on March 8th. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Now let's take a look at our closing markets. From Chicago, December new crop corn closed 4.25 cents lower at 470 3/4. November new crop soybeans down 8 cents at 1051 3/4. And July new crop wheat closed down 9.25 cents at 608 a bushel. Currently, the March Class 3 milk contract is down a nickel at 1901 a hundredweight, and the April contract is down 7 cents at 1864 a hundredweight. Class 3 milk goes to make cheese, which is also lower today. Barrel cheese actually closed unchanged at $1.80, but the 40-pound block cheese closed down 2 cents at $1.88. For the Midwest Farm Report, on a Monday, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Sunny and still warm today, with high temperatures climbing to the mid-40s and rain rolling in at night. It does have a chance to mix with some snow overnight and then flips back to regular rain tomorrow afternoon because high temperatures once again reach the mid-40s. But before that, beware of icy spots. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 48.
The Badgers.
Feeds Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Flee.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
What celebrity would you like to hug? It's International Hug Day. I wouldn't say Josh Brolin is like my favorite actor, but he's got like a quiet macho-ness to him. Actor Glenn Morshower joins us now.
My self-esteem was jolted when you did not mention me as your hugging preference.
I didn't want to rush it. I just want to see how. Let's just dip our toes in the water here and see what kind of relationship develops, shall we?
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Will Westmoreland is a farmer in southwestern Missouri. He has some explanations on why we are where we are today. It's really important. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know? Talking about a river.
I got a revolution for you in public education. Here's an idea. Starting salary for public school teachers, $100,000. And it goes up the more challenging the school district you work in. It goes up the higher percentage of your class that has IEPs. It goes up the harder your stinking job is. How about performance bonuses for teachers? We don't have enough public school teachers. Let's put in an actual minimum wage. When teachers who work full time can't pay for housing in places like Mississippi, Georgia, and Alabama, Kentucky, that's an education crisis. But I don't hear calls from the right to pay teachers what they're worth. No, we're going to give tax cuts to billionaires and defund public education. Really ticks me off. Also have to just get in this one last thing before we move on, folks. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've been talking about public education. We got a big superintendent race here in the state of Wisconsin. General election on April 1st. We got one candidate who is the current superintendent. Lots of challenges in public education, no doubt about it. We got another candidate endorsed by Crazy Moms for Liberty in the far right, taking gobs of money from billionaire donors, who has no articulated platform at all other than, like, choice is good and something vague about standards. Here's the other small topic that I've got to get in on very briefly. I hear this one a lot. I sent my kids to private school. I just went to private school. Why should I pay for public education? It's one of my favorites. Because when I hear this from people, my response is something along the lines of this. Well, I have my own militia and a small arsenal. Why should any of my tax dollars pay for the U.S. military? Well, I have a huge burn pit in my backyard, so I don't think any of my tax dollars should go to municipal waste disposal. I have my own little rocket ship that I fly around in. I don't think any of my dollars should go to any of our roads or bridges or other infrastructure. That same little militia and my big arsenal, yeah, not only should I not pay for any of the U.S. military, I don't need to pay for any of the local police force. I created a new fire retardant substance that my entire house is covered in, so I'm going to opt out of paying any taxes for the fire department. Just saying. It's not a multiple choice thing with your taxes. The way that we impact that is through voting. And I think it is irresponsible to elect someone to be the superintendent of public education in the state that has no articulable platform, no plans, nothing specific that she wants to change or keep or, I don't know, do if the Federal Department of Education goes away. No articulable platform whatsoever. That's not somebody I'm going to be voting for. Tom from LA, you're going to help me bridge from this topic of public education into my next one of DEI in the age of Trump. Go for it, Tom.
Thanks as always, Maggie. First, why would you want to pay for two school systems, people of Wisconsin?
Great point.
You would lose your Friday. You would lose your Friday football games, which is a kind of a community thing. You would lose forensics and debate. You would lose basketball games that you all go to as a community. If you're going to start completely depleting the public school system, this is what you're getting rid of. So a vote for this this woman that's with the charter schools is a vote for that. You aren't going to have that community Friday night football games, especially in the rural areas. And I know I grew up in a town of 2,000. That was a big part in Wisconsin, in Durand, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I would really, really think twice about how it is that you want to tear down the public schools. Second, when it comes to, because I know we're making a bridge to DEI, Maggie, the way I thought of DEI is as a white, gay, white privileged gay guy, because that's what I am. You know what? When I see someone is for diversity, equity, and inclusion, I want to work for that company.
Yes.
I want to bring my talent, my Wisconsin work ethic to the job to be the best I can be. I don't want to have to worry about working for someone that may have a bias against LGBTQ, black, whatever it might be. So I actually feel more comfortable. And when I feel more comfortable, I can do my job more complete.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that happened here in California when they finally added sexual orientation to the list of different things that you can't discriminate upon. It's more about the support. It's more about the fact that you can't just have the good old boys. And what I mean by that is white Anglo-Saxon Protestant men making jokes like Teddy did a week ago when he said, hey, you know, basically he was saying, hey, little lady.
Yes.
That is what erases the DEI. DEI does not mean you're getting hired before somebody else. For all you people out there that think that, it means that we're going to kick your ass and we are going to work on our merits to be the best that we can be. And you're not going to get the job off of merit and success and work ethic. And I will challenge anybody of these right-wing callers. You want to have a one-on-one at who has a harder work ethic than myself versus you conservatives that are always playing victim? Bring it on.
With that, Tom from LA, thanks for your call. Let's take a listen to Representative Jasmine Crockett. And Cal, this is going to be cut 27 on this very same idea.
I am tired of the white tears. Listen, if you are competent, you are not concerned. When I walk into Congress every single day, you know why I don't feel a way and why you can't make me doubt who I am? Is because I know that I had to work 10 times as hard as they did just to get into the seat. When you look and you compare me to Marjorie Taylor Greene or me to Lauren Boebert, there is no comparison. And that is the life that we have always lived. So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys that have been beaten out by people that historically have had to work so much harder. This is why they don't want us to have education. This is why they are trying to literally say we won't fund the HBCUs, because they know that if they've already gone after affirmative action and they're saying, you know what, don't allow them to come into, say, these PWIs, as we call them, don't allow them to come into these institutions. We know why they created the HBCUs in the first place. It was because they wouldn't allow us into the white institutions. And so now they're not allowing us in. And now they're saying, you know what, we're also going to defund the HBCUs. You know why? Because they don't want any more Kamala Harris's. They don't want any more Jasmine Crockett's. But I got news for them. I don't care what they do. We will fight to the end to make sure that we get our due.
I have such a hard time on a day-over-day basis understanding why anyone who truly works hard and is truly extraordinary, has talents, has exceptional abilities, is afraid of, complains of DEI. I don't get it. Because the only thing that DEI stands for is that you don't get the presumption of entitlement to that job, to that benefit, to that perk, to that enrollment slot because you're white and wealthy and or male and or cisgendered. It's not opposing people that are white, wealthy, cisgendered, male. It's saying you simply don't get the presumption of entitlement in every single space that you're in, that we must actually consider the talents, skills, and experiences of people who aren't white, cisgendered, and male, and wealthy. You know what? Affirmative action is still legal in this damn country. legacy admissions to our nation's most elite universities. That's affirmative action. It's affirmative action for mediocre rich white people. So don't talk to me about merit. And I'll tell you this much. I have worked in a diversity of environments over a 20 plus year career as an attorney, as an economist, as a public servant. Do you think a girl from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, had to work as hard or harder than a kid with a trust fund that attended Columbia or Harvard to get the same job that they got at a law firm in New York upon graduation from law school? Do you think that a girl from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, whose mom grew up on a farm, whose dad was a civil servant who paid his way through college, that doesn't have a trust fund, didn't have any connections in the East Coast corridor of elite prep schools and Ivy League universities, once I got to said law firm, had to work as hard or harder than the people that had the same job as me that knew 25 different equity partners at that firm because their dads or moms and dads all went to school at said elite East Coast corridor prep schools and law schools. So affirmative action very much still exists in this country. It operates to privilege mediocre white kids who are rich who wouldn't have otherwise been able to get into said universities. Because why would you mark on your application that you're a legacy if your application was good enough to get you in on that thing that they like to call merit? You wouldn't. And here's the thing. All of that has gotten sold to you, to all of us in the middle class, hardworking folks in the middle class, based upon this fallacy, and I talked about it right in the wake of the election, as if there's not enough for all of us. You have been told that the world is zero sum and that there's not enough, and that if a black or brown person or a gay person or somebody that's got a different pronoun than you think they should, a woman, that if they do better, you, in this instance, in this discussion, a white man has to do worse. That's a lie. And it's one of the most dangerous lies of modern American political currency today. So do not believe in this lie of zero-sum, false scarcity, dog eat dog. If my neighbor does better, then I'm doing worse. That is a lie fed to you by people like Elon Musk to keep us more worried about what our black brothers and sisters are doing, or our white brothers and sisters are doing, or the gay family down the street, as opposed to what the billionaire overlords are doing. Lori from Beaver Dam, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
That is a lie.
Hey, Lori, can you turn your radio down and give it another shot?
Oh, yes. Hi. Sorry. Yeah. I have a question about just maybe you can help me with the DEI. Are there many companies that just want to hire white men? Is that what's going on?
Yes.
Do these the companies, the guys that these right-wing rich guys, they just want to hire white men?
I'm going to hold this question, bring everybody back to answer, like, why do we need DEI? Are companies intentionally just trying to hire older, rich, white guys? What's up with that? We're going to hold Lori's question. Thank you so much, Lori, for Beaver Dam. We're going to answer it on the other side of this break. You want to hear my thoughts on that? You're going to have to keep it locked. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Back in just a moment.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In the coming weeks, Virginia GOP Governor Glenn Youngkin considers multiple pro-voter bills sent to his desk by a Democratic majority legislature. A state constitutional amendment also moves to the November ballot, which restores voting rights to returning citizens after felony convictions. Almost a dozen pro-voter bills have advanced in January and February, most recently protecting voters from premature purges. Last August, Youngkin ordered voter registration purges within 90 days of the election, upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court just 2 weeks before the election. In response, the Virginia legislature passed House bills prohibiting the purging of a voter using unverified external data as justification and establishing specific criteria for removal. SB 813 specifically prohibits voter list purges within 90 days of the election. After blocking GOP attempts to shorten early voting in primaries, the legislature passed SB 760, extending deadlines for returning mail-in ballots to 3 days after Election Day and allowing curing of deficient ballots. In 2023, Governor Youngkin reversed policies of recent governors and restores voting rights to citizens who've completed felony sentences only on a case-by-case basis. House Resolution 2 would automatically restore those rights and will appear on the November 2025 ballot. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've just started to go deep into our conversation this afternoon about DEI in the age of Trump. DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. What's the opposite of that? What does it mean when somebody says, like, we need to get DEI out of our company? You mean you want a segregationist, inequitable, exclusive company? Institution of higher learning? We were asked by a new caller just before the break, why do we need DEI? Let me give you an example. When I was the chief legal officer for Milwaukee County, one of the first things I did was look at our total expenditures every year that we spent on outside lawyers. I had an office of 15 lawyers and 10 paraprofessionals, so we got 25, 26 people on staff. So when we go, when we don't do the work in my office and we send it out, I wanted to take a look at all those expenditures. Is that reasonable? Should we be able to do some of that in-house? Oh, and since these are tax dollars that are being spent for this outside counsel services, and they come from the taxpayers of Milwaukee County, which is a very diverse county, my hope would be that the law firms that are enriching themselves from county taxpayer dollars, that those companies, those law firms, have demographics that reflect, or at least attempt to reflect, I don't know, look a little bit like the taxpayers that are paying those bills. So I wanted to know, what are the demographics of these law firms that my office would hire when we couldn't do the given legal business of the county? Would it, by the way, you want to Google this and find the report I released? Go ahead. My last name is spelled D-A-U-N. That was Milwaukee County Diversity Report in 2018. What would you be surprised that when I did this And when I looked at the equity partnership ranks of the largest law firms in southeastern Wisconsin, one of those law firms had zero black equity partners. Zero, not one. That nearly all of them had less than 10% equity partners of all non-white groups. That nearly all of them had less than 30% equity partners who are female. This notwithstanding the fact that enrollment of non-white people in law school and women has been exploding over the last 25 years. That women, as a proportion of law school graduates, are now more than men and have been every year for the last 20 plus years. And yet, equity partners in almost any law firm, you're not going to see a 50-50 split. Oh, 30% is doing real good. Now, unless you want to call me up and be like, yeah, women are dumber than men, which is an argument I'd love to have. The reason for that, the reason for that inequity is that absent some very thoughtful, deliberate approach to hiring, compensation, and promotion, every single person's brain that is listening right now, we are wired from our first moments, from the beginning of humanity, to preference and think of as safe those people that look most like us. Because back in our Cro-Magnon days, threats abounded, and our tiny little tribe of people that looked like us, that was our safe space. The first safety that's ever given a child comes from its parents, who are more likely than not to look just like the baby. Our brains are wired to prefer people that are just like us. And so we can overcome that ancient, unsophisticated way our brain looks by bringing it from our subconscious into our day-to-day conscious mind. And those that do that are more likely than those that don't to say, oh yeah, hey, this woman didn't go to an Ivy League law school, but boy, does she have some she's an economist. Maybe we should hire this woman from the University of Wisconsin Law School, even though we've never done that before. Even though I don't have a frat brother who's her dad that I can call up and like get a vouch. And I don't mean, please accept my most sincere apology for using myself as an example here. Do you think it might be worse, more challenging, more discriminatory if I was a black woman? Do you think it would be worse, more challenging, more discriminatory if I was a black trans woman? Do you think it would be worse, more discriminatory, more challenging, less likely to reward me for my merit in this world if I was a black trans woman in a wheelchair? That, my friends, is why we need DEI. Because people besides those that look, live, love just like you, they are also talented, maybe even more talented than the next candidate or applicant in your business that, again, looks, believes, loves, and lives just like you. And I haven't even gotten into all the Harvard Business School studies that say the more diverse companies are, the higher their profits are. That's going to do it for me today. I'm going to be sticking around with Dom Salvia, who's up next for a little overtime with Maggie Dawn on the Dom Salvia Show. Remember, I'll stick up for you. I hope you stick up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
See you walk away from me, yeah. Baby, 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 baby.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Dr. Kristen Lierley, who talks health and the Oscars. And mob expert Bob Dennis joins me in the studio to talk the mafia and urban legends. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
Don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. There were a number of legal defeats for the president today. One federal judge gave the administration 2 days to release billions in foreign aid. Allison Keyes reports.
A group of businesses, nonprofits, and organizations that do foreign aid work argued at an emergency hearing that they had been forced to stop their work because of President Trump's executive action.
Another judge ruled that federal assistance must be unfrozen, and another blocked his effort to halt the nation's refugee admissions program. Union members held a rally outside the Department of Health and Human Services building.
Fund our research!
Life-saving research!
White House spokeswoman Caroline Leavitt called the message to many confused federal workers on reporting their activities simple.
The president defers to his cabinet secretaries, who he's obviously entrusted to pursue the guidance relative to their specific workforce.
On Wall Street, the Dow finished 159 points higher. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.